rather dark and smelling of smoke and cooked grease and long-worn, long-unwashed clothes. At the further end of the room was another doorway, through which came a shaft of sunlight and the noise, very loud and close, of the drums. They stepped across the threshold and found themselves on a wide terrace. Below them, shut in by the tall houses, was the village square, crowded with Indians. Bright blankets and feathers in black hair and the glint of turquoise and dark skin shining with heat. Lenina put her handkerchief to her nose again. In the open space at the center of the square were two circular platforms of masonry and trampled clay, the roofs, it was evident, of underground chambers, for in the center of each platform was an open hatchway, with a ladder emerging from the lower darkness. A sound of subterranean flute playing came up, and was almost lost in the steady, remorseless persistence of the drums. Lenina liked the drums. Shutting her eyes, she abandoned herself to their soft, repeated thunder, allowed it to invade her consciousness more and more completely, till at last there was nothing left in the world but that one deep pulse of sound. It reminded her reassuringly of the synthetic noises made at Solidarity services and Ford's Day celebrations. "Orgy porgy," she whispered to herself. The drums beat out just the same rhythms. There was a sudden startling burst of singing, hundreds of male voices crying out fiercely in harsh metallic unison. A few long notes and silence, the thunderous silence of the drums. Then shrill, in a neighing treble, the women's answer. Then again the drums, and once more the men's deep, savage affirmation of their manhood. Queer, yes, the place was queer. So was the music, so were the clothes and the goiters and the skin diseases and the old people. But the performance itself, there seemed to be nothing specially queer about that. "It reminds me of a lower caste community sing," she told Bernard. But a little later, it was reminding her a good deal less of that innocuous function. For suddenly there had swarmed up from those round chambers underground a ghastly troop of monsters. Hideously masked or painted out of all semblance of humanity, they had tramped out a strange limping dance round the square, round and again round, singing as they went round and round, each time a little faster, and the drums had changed and quickened their rhythm, so that it became like the pulsing of fever in the ears, and the crowd had begun to sing with the dancers, louder and louder, and first one woman had shrieked, and then another, and another, as though they were being killed, and then suddenly the leader of the dancers broke out of the line, ran to a big wooden chest, which was standing at one end of the square, raised the lid, and pulled out a pair of black snakes. A great yell went up from the crowd, and all the other dancers ran towards him with outstretched hands. He tossed the snakes to the first comers, then dipped back into the chest for more, more and more black snakes and brown and mottled. He flung them out, and then the dance began again on a different rhythm. Round and round they went with their snakes, snakily, with a soft undulating movement at the knees and hips, round and round. Then the leader gave a signal, and one after another all the snakes were flung down in the middle of the square. An old man came up from underground and sprinkled them with cornmeal, and from the other hatchway came a woman and sprinkled them with water from a black jar. Then the old man lifted his hand, and startlingly, terrifyingly, there was absolute silence. The drums stopped beating. Life seemed to have come to an end. The old man pointed towards the two hatchways that gave entrance to the lower world, and slowly, raised by invisible hands from below, there emerged from the one a painted image of an eagle, from the other that of a man, naked and nailed to a cross. They hung there, seemingly self-sustained, as though watching. The old man clapped his hands. Naked, but for a white cotton breechcloth, a boy of about 18 stepped out of the crowd and stood before him, his hands crossed over his chest, his head bowed. The old man made the sign of the cross over him and turned away. Slowly, the boy began to walk round the writhing heap of snakes. He had completed the first circuit and was halfway through the second when, from among the dancers, a tall man wearing the mask of a coyote and holding in his hand a whip of plaited leather advanced towards him. The boy moved on as though unaware of the other's existence. The coyote man raised his whip. There was a long moment of expectancy. Then a swift movement, the whistle of the lash, and its loud, flat-sounding impact on the flesh. The boy's body quivered, but he made no sound. He walked on at the same slow, steady pace. The coyote struck again, again, and at every blow at first a gasp, and then a deep groan went up from the crowd. The boy walked on. Twice, thrice, four times round he went. The blood was streaming. Five times round, six times round. Suddenly, Lenina covered her face with her hands and began to sob. "Stop them! Stop them!" she implored. But the whip fell, and fell inexorably. Seven times round. Then, all at once, the boy staggered, and, still without a sound, pitched forward onto his face. Bending over him, the old man touched his back with a long white feather, held it up for a moment crimson for the people to see, then shook it thrice over the snakes. A few drops fell, and suddenly the drums broke out again into a panic of hurrying notes. There was a great shout. The dancers rushed forward, picked up the snakes, and ran out of the square. Men, women, children, all the crowd ran after them. A minute later, the square was empty. Only the boy remained, prone, where he had fallen, quite still. Three old women came out of one of the houses, and with some difficulty lifted him and carried him in. The eagle and the man on the cross kept guard for a little while over the empty pueblo. Then, as though they had seen enough, sank slowly down through their hatchways, out of sight, into the nether world. Lenina was still sobbing. "Too awful," she kept repeating, and all Bernard's consolations were in vain. "Too awful, that blood," she shuddered. "Oh, I wish I had my soma." There was the sound of feet in the inner room. Lenina did not move, but sat with her face in her hands, unseeing, apart. Only Bernard turned round. The dress of the young man who now stepped out onto the terrace was Indian, but his plaited hair was straw-coloured, his eyes a pale blue, and his skin a white skin, bronzed. "Hallo! Good morrow," said the stranger, in faultless but peculiar English. "You're civilized, aren't you? You come from the other place, outside the reservation."
"Who on earth?"
Bernard began in astonishment. The young man sighed and shook his head.
"A most unhappy gentleman."
And pointing to the bloodstains in the center of the square,
"Do you see that damned spot?"
he asked in a voice that trembled with emotion.
"A gram is better than a dam," said Lenina mechanically from behind her hands. "I wish I had my soma."
"I ought to have been there," the young man went on. "Why wouldn't they let me be the sacrifice? I'd have gone round 10 times. 12, 15, Palotiwa only got as far as 7. They could have had twice as much blood from me. The multitudinous seas incarnadine."
He flung out his arms in a lavish gesture, then despairingly let them fall again.
"But they wouldn't let me. They disliked me for my complexion. It's always been like that, always."
Tears stood in the young man's eyes. He was ashamed and turned away. Astonishment made Lenina forget the deprivation of soma. She uncovered her face and, for the first time, looked at the stranger.
"Do you mean to say that you wanted to be hit with that whip?"
Still averted from her, the young man made a sign of affirmation.
"For the sake of the pueblo, to make the rain come and the corn grow, and to please Pukong and Jesus, and then to show that I can bear pain without crying out. Yes!"
And his voice suddenly took on a new resonance. He turned with a proud squaring of the shoulders, a proud defiant lifting of the chin.
"To show that I'm a man!" "Oh!"
He gave a gasp and was silent, gaping. He had seen for the first time in his life the face of a girl whose cheeks were not the color of chocolate or dogskin, whose hair was auburn and permanently waved, and whose expression, amazing novelty, was one of benevolent interest. Lenina was smiling at him. Such a nice-looking boy, she was thinking, and a really beautiful body. The blood rushed up into the young man's face. He dropped his eyes, raised them again for a moment, only to find her still smiling at him, and was so much overcome that he had to turn away and pretend to be looking very hard at something on the other side of the square. Bernard's questions made a diversion. Who? How? When? From where? Keeping his eyes fixed on Bernard's face, for so passionately did he long to see Lenina smiling that he simply dared not look at her. The young man tried to explain himself. Linda and he, Linda was his mother, the word made Lenina look uncomfortable, were strangers in the reservation. Linda had come from the other place long ago, before he was born, with a man who was his father. Bernard pricked up his ears. She had gone walking alone in those mountains over there to the north, had fallen down a steep place, and hurt her head.
"Go on, go on," said Bernard excitedly.
Some hunters from Malpais had found her and brought her to the Pueblo. As for the man who was his father, Linda had never seen him again. His name was Tomakin. Yes, Thomas was the DHC's first name. He must have flown away back to the other place, away without her, a bad, unkind, unnatural man. "And so I was born in Malpais," he concluded. "In Malpais." And he shook his head. The squalor of that little house on the outskirts of the Pueblo. A space of dust and rubbish separated it from the village. Two famine-stricken dogs were nosing obscenely in the garbage at its door. Inside, when they entered, the twilight stank and was loud with flies. "Linda!" the young man called. From the inner room, a rather hoarse female voice said,
"Coming!"
They waited. In bowls on the floor were the remains of a meal, perhaps of several meals. The door opened. A very stout blonde squaw stepped across the threshold and stood looking at the strangers, staring incredulously, her mouth open. Lenina noticed with disgust that two of the front teeth were missing, and the color of the ones that remained. She shuddered. It was worse than the old man, so fat, and all the lines in her face, the flabbiness, the wrinkles, and the sagging cheeks with those purplish blotches, and the red veins on her nose, the bloodshot eyes, and that neck, and the blanket she wore over her head, ragged and filthy, and under the brown sack-shaped tunic those enormous breasts, the bulge of the stomach, the hips, oh, much worse than the old man, much worse. And suddenly the creature burst out into a torrent of speech, rushed at her with outstretched arms, and fought. It was too revolting. In another moment she'd be sick, pressed her against the bulge, the bosom, and began to kiss her. Fought to kiss, slobberingly, and smelt too horrible, obviously never had a bath, and simply reeked of that beastly stuff that was put into Delta and Epsilon bottles. No, it wasn't true about Bernard. Positively stank of alcohol. She broke away as quickly as she could. A blubbered and distorted face confronted her. The creature was crying.
"Oh, my dear, my dear!"
The torrent of words flowed sobbingly.
"If you knew how glad, after all these years, a civilized face, yes, and civilized clothes, because I thought I should never see a piece of real acetate silk again."
She fingered the sleeve of Lenina's shirt. The nails were black.
"And those adorable viscous velveteen shorts. Do you know, dear, I still got my old clothes, the ones I came in, put away in a box. I'll show you them afterwards, though of course the acetate has all gone into holes, but such a lovely white bandolier, though I must say your green morocco is even lovelier. Not that it did me much good, that bandolier."
Her tears began to flow again.
I suppose John told you what I had to suffer, and not a gram of soma to be had. Only a drink of mescal every now and then when Pape used to bring it. Pape is a boy I used to know, but it makes you feel so bad afterwards, the mescal does, and you're sick with the peyote. Besides, it always makes that awful feeling of being ashamed so much worse the next day. And I was so ashamed. Just think of it, me, a beta, having a baby. Put yourself in my place.
The mere suggestion made Lennon a shudder.
Though it wasn't my fault, I swear, because I still don't know how it happened, seeing that I did all the Malthusian drill, you know, by numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, always. I swear it. But all the same, it happened. And of course, there wasn't anything like an abortion centre here. Is it still down in Chelsea, by the way? She asked.
Lennon nodded.
And still floodlighted on Tuesdays and Fridays?
Lennon nodded again.
That lovely pink glass tower.
Poor Linda lifted her face and with closed eyes ecstatically contemplated the bright remembered image.
And the river at night,
she whispered. Great tears oozed slowly out from between her tight-shut eyelids.
And flying back in the evening from Stoke Poges. And then a hot bath and a vibro vacuum massage. But there...
She drew a deep breath, shook her head, opened her eyes again, sniffed once or twice, then blew her nose on her fingers and wiped them on the skirt of her tunic.
Oh, I'm sorry,
she said in response to Lennon's involuntary grimace of disgust.
I oughtn't have done that, I'm sorry. But what are you to do when there aren't any handkerchiefs? I remember how it used to upset me, all that dirt and nothing being aseptic. I had an awful cut in my hip when they first brought me here. You can't imagine what they used to put on it. Filth, just filth. Civilization is sterilization, I used to say to them. And streptococ G to Bambury D to see a fine bathroom on WC, as though they were children. But of course they didn't understand, how should they? And in the end I suppose I got used to it. And anyhow, how can you keep things clean when there isn't hot water laid on? And look at these clothes. This beastly wool isn't like acetate. It lasts and lasts, and you're supposed to mend it if it gets torn. But I'm a baiter. I worked in the fertilizing room. Nobody ever taught me to do anything like that. It wasn't my business. Besides, it never used to be right to mend clothes. Throw them away when they got holes in them and buy new. The more stitches, the less riches. Isn't that right? Mending's so antisocial. But it's all different here. It's like living with lunatics. Everything they do is mad.
She looked round, saw John and Bernard had left them and were walking up and down in the dust and garbage outside the house. But nonetheless confidentially lowering her voice and leaning while Lennon stiffened and shrank so close that the blown reek of embryo poison stirred the hair on her cheek.
For instance, she hoarsely whispered, take the way they have one another here. Mad, I tell you, absolutely mad. Everybody belongs to everyone else, don't they? Don't they?
She insisted, tugging at Lennon's sleeve. Lenina nodded her averted head, let out the breath she had been holding, and managed to draw in another one, relatively untainted.
"Well, here," the other went on, "nobody's supposed to belong to more than one person, and if you have people in the ordinary way, they others think you're wicked and antisocial. They hate and despise you. Once a lot of women came and made a scene because their men came to see me.
Well, why not? And then they rushed at me. No, it was too awful. I can't tell you about it.
Linda covered her face with her hands and shuddered.
They're so hateful, the women here. Mad, mad and cruel. And of course they don't know anything about Malthusian drill or bottles or decanting or anything of that sort. So they're having children all the time, like dogs. It's too revolting. And to think that I... Oh, Ford, Ford, Ford! And yet John was a great comfort to me. I don't know what I should have done without him. Even though he did get so upset whenever a man... quite as a tiny boy, even...